Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
And a very happy Saturday to everybody who's listening. This is Detours here with Jody and Greg here on Joy 94.9. How are you, Greg?
I'm beautiful, Jody. I'm having a marvellous day. I do love travel and tourism. It just gets me sparked up on a Saturday morning. It's fabulous.
It sure does. Well, it's been a really interesting week for travel all around the world. Throughout the program, we're going to talk about our reflections of the last week, some major announcements by the federal government in Australia about the National Disability Insurance Scheme.
And you heard it first here on Detours when we had James O'Brien a few weeks back.
Absolutely. And a range of issues in the UK, obviously, with the riots. What does that mean for people who are planning to travel? And it's also going to be next month, the 10th anniversary of the tragic events of September 11. And there's some really interesting things that the US consulates around the world are doing to commemorate as a National Day of Service. We're also going to be having a sneak look at the new book out by Brian Thacker, Tell Them to Get Lost. We're hoping we'll have him on the program soon.
Fantastic.
And we'll talk about Tourism Week. Oh, so much to do. But we shall now talk with Macca.
Good morning. Good morning. And it was a week ago at about this time that I was speaking to you via sat phone from the outback. And look, a little brief outline. We took seven vehicles. It was 1,670 kilometres, some of it in the air or airborne in the cars because it was so bumpy. And it was on the Canning stock route. Now, I am passionate about the outback. Probably less than 1% of Australians, other than those that live there, have actually seen the outback and been to the outback. Most important thing is you've got to be prepared. You've got to be prepared. You've got to take enough water. You've got to take enough fuel. You've got to take enough food. You've got to be prepared for medical situations, for mechanical situations. And I've got to tell you, the Canning stock route is one of the toughest off-road treks you can do in the world. And we did it in 11 days. And the thing, we had 16 European journalists and about six Australian journalists over the course of the event. And the thing that strikes you most about the outback is how the scenery changes. And people make this assumption that there's no life out there. Well, there is life out there. Everywhere you stop, the scenery changes. It goes from, you could be driving through someone's paddock, through grass. You know, you could be driving to one of the back beaches down the peninsula. Just that's what it sort of looks like. Then you're in very thick scrub and of mulga and spinifex. You know, you've got desert oaks, you've got gum trees. But the thing that's dotted all along this track is the wells, which is where the early explorers established this stock route to move stock from the top of WA down to the bottom. And the wells, and it's water. This is about life. And the beauty, whether it's early morning, whether it's late at night, and we didn't have five-star hotel, but we had million-star accommodation.
Oh, gorgeous.
And it is a couple of nights actually sleeping out, not in the tent, because some of the nights were warmer. If you haven't been to the outback, even if it's on an organised tour, you've got to do it, because this is something that absolutely defines Australia. This is, you know, when people think of Australia, this is what they think of. You've got to see it. It is, the beauty is unbelievable.
You can prepare, like you've done the reading. I'm sure your 16 journalists from overseas, from Europe, did the reading. What were their faces like as this journey unfolded?
Well, the red dust, the one thing that is common is the red dust, and it gets into everything. It gets into everything. And basically, you know, you can have bush showers and things like that, but there's no substitute for a, you know, for a long, hot shower, and I'm talking like a 15-minute shower. But they were amazed. They were amazed at the expanse. They were amazed at the beauty. They were amazed at just how tough it is out there. And, you know, the Australians that live out there and work out there, whether they're Indigenous people, whether they're Caucasians, whether they're – it doesn't matter. They've all got a toughness about them that is you know, you think Crocodile Dundee, well, yeah, it's not that. But it's – they're absolutely committed and they love living out there and they know this country. And you know, you can stop the car and literally you walk a few feet off the track or 20 metres off the track and in some of this bush you can't see the road. So and it's a dangerous place. But you might be walking on ground that no one has walked on for thousands of years. And that's a pretty special experience. And it is the life and it is the beauty, you know, the wildlife. You know, we saw this goanna that sort of ran away from us, which would have been at least a couple of metres long and probably 150 kilos, as big as a crocodile. But also, you know, the birds. And actually, the doctor that was with us, he's a Royal Flying Doctor Service doctor, but he's a bird watcher. And he came on the trip because he wanted – there are some parrots that are on the Canning Stock Route, and that's the only place they're found. And, you know, he wanted – you know, he was fascinated by all the wildlife. But the Europeans, they were completely blown away, completely blown away. And there's something special – you know, it creates teamwork. And, you know, because you've got to get to camp by 4:30 each day because it takes you an hour and a half to set up your camp. So you've got to set up your tents. You've got to set up the International Media Centre with the satellite dish, you know.
It sounds very .com for the desert.
Yeah, but it is. But you need to, you're literally, yeah. You're sitting around the campfire, Jody, with your laptop on your knee, glass of red wine. And incidentally, we did drink over 128 bottles of red, which I think I only drank one or two of them.
Of course, Joy recommends moderation.
Oh yeah, it was moderation.
But not drinking and driving.
But, you know, you're on your laptop, so you know you're checking your email. You know, the guys are on Facebook. The journos are logging their stories. The photographer's downloading, and this is all through a satellite dish with a little generator. And at the end of it, we it has a log. There was over 100 gigabytes of material that, you know, combined upload and download. 100 gigabytes.
Now, isn't that fascinating when you think of back in time,
yeah,
when Indigenous people, you know, were living in Australia solely, and then different people and from different cultures arrived in Australia, particularly I was thinking the Arabs who went through parts of Northern Territory and Western Australia.
And the camels.
With the camels. And so...
And there are wild camels.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is... Look, I will say it. There's a website that you can go to, and do some Google searches. But motoring.com.au, they're on it from start to finish, and they will cover it. They covered it every day, and there's picture galleries. It gives you a bit of a feel for it. But the most bizarre thing is that, you know, when I arrived back in Melbourne, I was driving to work yesterday. The traffic. And you actually, you know, I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know. Like out there, there is no traffic.
But there's no traffic lights either.
Yeah, well, there's no traffic
lights.
Even
in some of the townships.
And some of the remote settlements and the Aboriginal settlements. And you don't actually realise how remote you are. And the doctor talked about this. He talked about, you know, as part of the safety briefing that you have, you talk about the golden hour in emergency medicine. He said, out here it's the golden day. And, you know, some of the points there, it would actually take them, it would take more than 24 hours to get someone there to, you know, to evacuate you, if you could get evacuated. And there was a group of 8 German tourists earlier in the year. Only 7 of them came back because one of them wandered off.
Well, that's the number one rule, stay with your vehicle.
Stay with your vehicle. But... It is the beauty. It is the variation in it. But you've got to be prepared. And this look, for us, it was a bit of a, you know, for my work, it was a bit of a commercial thing. But I'm passionate about outback tourism, and the message that I want people to get is be prepared, because if you don't take enough water, if you don't take enough fuel, if you don't take enough food, if you don't have, you know, basic mechanical knowledge, and good first aid night. None of us were injured, but, you know, people will do silly things like get out of their tent in the middle of the night to have a wee.
And trip up or fall.
And not put shoes on.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, some of those little bits of mulga, they will, you know, as we call them, the Japanese safety boots, otherwise known as thongs, will not, you know, bits of mulga will come through and you'll get a really nasty jab in the foot. But not just that, you know, some of, you know, goannas are known to bite.
So tell us about goannas. What do you do if a goanna runs at you, Macca?
If you're there with a goanna, the thing you should do is lay down or sit down, because goannas like to go up things, like trees. So if you're standing up, a goanna, you know, in a lot of cases will run up you. Not because it wants to eat you, but that's what they do.
Well,
you
that's know, probably what they do also for their own safety.
It's fear for safety. One of the wells, there was a huge python. You open the top of the well, and there's this huge python in there. It would have, 7, 8, 9 feet, and I don't know exactly, it was a big snake. And it was sort of looking out. But one of the things is, you know, you've driven for hours and hours and hours, and you're dusty, and you come to one of these wells, and there's fresh water or it's brackish water. You should always boil it. But what you do is, you actually, you know, you have the bucket on the rope and stuff, and you stand, you know, there's two of you. One of you gets the water out of the well, and you just pour it over yourself. And people go, I don't want to do that. I tell you what, it is fantastic. But we ate well every night.
You know, this, I feel passion from you, Macca, about this. This is really passionate for you.
It is so beautiful, and it is so challenging. And you actually get a perspective of you know, what actually a small part we actually play, but that how important the outback has been to Australia and continues to be to Australia. I mean, there are millions and millions and millions of acres, and every single foot you travel is slightly different. And the people that you meet and the experiences you have, if you haven't found yourself, you will realise something about yourself when you're sitting out there, whether it's when you're driving, whether it's sitting on a chair, whether it's just laying on the ground at night and looking at the stars. It's an experience that, seriously, I recommend everyone should do, because you ain't seen beauty till you've seen the Australian outback.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And I think if people are listening and they think, well, you know, I don't really know about all that preparedness stuff and it's a bit overwhelming, I think the best way to experience that would be with a licensed tour operator
absolutely.
Has that in-depth knowledge, that appreciation and respect for the landscape and its people, and who can help you unfold and understand the uniqueness of the biodiversity and cultures of and traditions and history.
And things like, you know, the camels, you know, why is the railway between Alice Springs and, you know, it called the Ghan? Because it's named after the Afghans, you know, who brought camels here. And there are wild camels, like feral camels in the outback. Of course, there are dingoes, but, you know, you see camels. And, you know, the European guys are going, have they escaped, you know? And I said, no, well, they're wild. And they said, how do they live? And I said, well, they've adapted. And, you know, one of the wells, 2 days before we got there, they had to pull a dead camel out, you know, that had wanted to get a drink and it fell in and, of course, drowned. Oh. You know, so it was about 100 metres away, and let me tell you, you ain't smelt nothing till you've smelt.
Yeah, I don't think I need to have that experience.
Yeah. But, you know, seriously, as I said, go to motoring.com.au. One of the guys that was with us, he covered the whole thing. There are some fantastic pictures and images, and hopefully it'll give you a flavour of it. But if you're thinking about doing the outback, by all means, do an organised tour. If you're a four-wheel driver, do it. You won't regret it.
We'll put some links up on the detours on joy.joy94.9 on Facebook. Or you can Twitter us at joy. Detours Joy 949, and ask where to get it, and we'll put it to you and remind you about it.
Or perhaps you might have had an experience you'd like to share. We'd love to hear from you. As always, SMS 0429 Joy 949, or you can email us at onair@joy.org.au. Thanks, Macca, for joining us and sharing that.
It's been a pleasure.
The Nation. Joy 94.9.
Joy Melbourne is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse lesbian and gay communities, enabling freedom of expression, the breaking down of isolation, and the celebration of our culture, achievements, and pride.
Listen to us right around the nation. Joy 94.9.
the music play on.
More disco. Joy 94.9.
And you're listening to the Detours Travel Show here on Joy 94.9. And I'm Jody, joined by Greg. It is 12:25 in Melbourne, Australia. Thanks for listening.
And it's fantastic. And Jody, we're very, very lucky today. We're just back from Thailand. We have a very special guest, Rob Bellman. Now, Rob Bellman is a voice that you've probably heard here at Joy for around about 4 years, and he works here on the fabulous news team.
I do that. I've been doing it for quite some time.
But,
Thank you.
Thanks for taking time and spending time with Detours
today. It's a pleasure.
Yeah.
I was hanging around, so why not?
You're hanging around. We've been hanging around the beaches of Thailand.
I have.
So tell us about your journey. Where'd you go and how did you plan it?
Okay. Well, actually, my sister would have been about 12 months ago, just popped up and said to me one day, you've thought about going to Thailand. And my sister and her husband have been probably about their fifth trip now. They absolutely love it. And I sort of went away and thought about it for a couple of days, and I thought, yeah, why not? So over about a 12-month period, she was looking for the different places we can go to, you know, the sort of decent accommodation and all that. And I must say, if anyone ever needs a holiday planned, my sister is the queen of planning a really good holiday. She really is.
You know, some people automatically love it and they have a natural instinct for, you know, Excel spreadsheets and organising.
Exactly.
And some people just get so overwhelmed.
And she has the patience to get up at like 3 o'clock in the morning and search for the really cheap flights and all that. But we spent 16 days there. I was in Bangkok for about probably three or four days. And then we spent 7 days in Koh Samui, which I must admit I absolutely loved. A beautiful island. Then we spent some time in Phuket. I like Phuket, beautiful beaches and all that, but a little bit too crazy and a little bit too hectic for my liking. So we sort of did Phuket where it was a little bit, we were in the sort of heart of where it was, you know, all the action was, the shopping and all that. And there's only so many times you can be offered a massage and a tuk-tuk. So and certainly, you know, very much an eye-opener as well, because I'd never been to Thailand before. So I was always interested in how these people live. And it is a beautiful country. They people with big hearts, you know, very kind and very giving. Look, you get your dodgy people, you know, here everywhere. And, you know, it's the same in Thailand. But just amazing. I went to some amazing places, rode the elephants. And yeah.
So riding elephants, I can relate to that experience, because when I went to India, I had the privilege of actually washing an elephant with its matuks, the trainers, the owners. But I was actually quite scared of riding the elephant because
really?
It's so high. Well, and you've got to spread your legs, like, you know, to get your balance and your grip so you don't fall off. I mean...
Well, you do, but we had this beautiful Thai man who was our guide, so he could probably tell that my friend of mine, Andrea, who also came on the holiday, we're a little bit, you know, a bit scared at first getting on top, because you are really high up and you sort of feel like you're leaning forward, so you've really got to get your balance right. But after, you know, a couple of minutes on it, knowing that we're in really good hands, we were just off and, you know, we got to pretty much hug the elephants.
They're
you know, they
creatures.
Are just absolutely beautiful.
So gentle.
And it's always something that I wanted to do.
Do you get to look in their eyes? Do you get a connection with the animal?
Very much so. And you can get, when they bring you back down, you can go down and feed them with bananas and all that. And look, there was one thing I've always wanted to do in my life, and that was ride an elephant. Mm. And I've fulfilled that now. And it was just the most amazing experience. They also had, at this particular park, they had monkey shows where you got to see monkeys, you know, do all sorts of weird and wonderful things. Like, there was snake show, cobra show, there was a bird show where, you know, the famous Macau bird, where it was up there and it was, you know, dancing away and doing some incredible things. So it was an eye-opener on so many levels, just the way people live, and yeah, just how they appreciate life, you know, a lot more, sort of being back for a couple of days and sort of walking around and, you know, getting back into life again, you realize how different we are from them.
That's an incredible experience.
Yeah.
So when you travel to the different parts of Thailand.
Yep.
What's the comparison between each part and the part before and the part afterwards?
We went to, like, we had a day where we spent on a speedboat, and that was an experience in itself because the it was a 12-hour day tour. So you went on the speedboat for 12 hours, but you stopped at different islands. We stopped at three different islands south of Koh Samui. But going over on the speedboat, you're going in a headwind, and we thought we'd be a little bit keen and confident. Oh, we'll sit up on the decking and, you know, where you get the great views and all that. But at the end of the day, when you're sitting on that decking and you're coming back in a hot wind and, you know, blaring sun, and we're actually lucky that day it wasn't overly too sunny, but the even on a cloudy day, you burnt. And I remember getting back to the beach and I could just feel my face and my head and my body just on fire from the speedboat trip. And we went snorkeling and, you know, swimming with little fishes around us. And look, it was an amazing experience. I'd probably definitely recommend it for anyone. Definitely. Yeah.
Sounds fantastic.
And I like the fact that you travel with your sister. Is there a bit of a bonding exercise that takes place when you travel with one of your close family?
Look, you know, my sister Marie and I, we have our moments in life and that, but we, she, you know, suggested the holiday to me, and I know that I'm someone I feel really quite safe with. And going overseas to Thailand and feeling comfortable with someone that, you know, knows what they're doing and knows what they're talking about, can get you through situations if you find yourself in a difficult situation. So she was a bit like a security blanket, and her husband Mark also came along, and my two nephews as well, and a couple of other people, a really good friend of mine, and a few others. So there's about, you know, eight of us there. And at first I thought, you know, eight of us going away together, we're obviously going to get on each other's nerves. But surprisingly not. My sister, I had a great time with her, and it was like, you know, I mean, it worked out where our relationship became a lot stronger. It wasn't that I was going on this holiday to bond with her or anything like that again, but it worked well, yeah.
It is interesting if you're travelling with groups of friends or family. My auntie said to me recently that she was going to go overseas with one of her daughters who has young children.
Yep.
And now I've got lots of aunties, so this won't be identifiable. And she said, you know, I sort of felt like I was invited to be not the nana, but the nanny.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, but that's what kids club's for. Surely you could be doing your Thai cooking classes,
exactly,
or whatever.
But I've had some great times travelling overseas with my best mate and his wife and their kids. It's just so much fun travelling with people's kids.
It is.
You can go and see, do things that kids do that you've never had a chance to
do. Well, like water slides or, you know, other bits and pieces.
And my nephew, so he's 18, so he's, you know, a bit of a handful. And my other nephew, Zach, he's 15. He's not much of a handful. They're both really good kids. But we all got along really quite well. And probably one of the highlights would have been going to the War Memorial and Cemetery at Hellfire Pass, where, of course, the Burma to Thailand railway was built, where all those thousands of people died between 1939 and 45. A very emotional day.
So what emotions flood through you when you're in Hellfire Pass?
Well, just knowing that there were Australians there, and there were so many other many other nationalities there as well, and they have a video that they go through the history of it for about 7 minutes, and it is the most emotional 7 minutes of your life. You sit there and hear the hell and the torture that these men went through and were beaten and starved, and just being there, also going to the cemetery and seeing, you know, hundreds of headstones with no name on them. So all these, you know, young men, and some of them age 18, 19, looking at the age, 18, 19, 20, obviously a rough idea of how old these young men were, having no name on their gravesite. Mm. Just...
When you're in Hellfire Pass, what do you hear? Is it silent? Do you hear bird life? What do you hear?
Oh, you hear... It's you know, surrounded by, you know, massive mountainous hills. You know, Burma's only 40 kilometres away from where it all happened. It's not a silence. It's just, you can feel the emotion. Everyone that goes there. I mean, I saw grown men crying and getting emotional watching this video. It's just the experience of being there and knowing that so many men sacrificed their life, and hearing how they died is heartbreaking. And it's as I said, you know, it opened my eyes to a whole lot of things, but that was one thing that really, I walked away feeling really quite educated by it. And Yeah, it was very emotional, very...
People often talk about walking down a path and finding something that related back to... that fell, you know, 50 years ago, 60 yeah. years ago, and fell and sitting on the floor of the forest and you've stumbled across it. Did you have those moments
you,
as well?
You do, but you're not allowed to take them. They actually warn you about taking rocks or, you know, anything from that area because... it's sacred, you know. It's a sacred site, and you wouldn't take from it in the first place. But yeah, just a very emotional. It was, you know, I didn't know a lot about the history behind it beforehand. You know, I knew bits and pieces from what I read, but spending a day there just was yeah. Play with emotions.
Now, that voice is Rob Bellman, who's a veteran newsreader here yes. under Tim Lennox's crew here at Joy 94.9, and he's sharing his experiences of amazing Southeast Asian journeys. You're on Joy 94.9 with Jodie and Greg on Detours.
Give us your feedback on air at joy.org.au. Joy 94.9. Touching our community right around the nation. Joy 94.9.
Yeah, that music. That's Jodie Wilmer's music selection. This is fantastic here on Detours. What was that song?
I am an 80s chick. You must know that. And that was Counting the Beat by the Swingers. And I was fantastic. Just sort of transported back to Caribbean of Rollerama.
Great song. Great song. Love it. Yeah,
great song. Now, you're listening to the Detours Travel Show here on Joy. I'm Jodie, joined by Greg. And our special guest is Ron, who you might be familiar with his voice. He's a newsreader here at Joy. We've been talking about his trip to Thailand. And so you spent time in other locations as well in Asia?
I did. I spent time in Phuket as well. That was after 7 days in Koh Samui. I'd probably do it if I could, do the holiday Phuket first and then do Koh Samui after. Well, in Koh Samui, we stayed about half an hour out of the main madness on this beautiful, in this little place called Coconut Villa Resort that had its own private beach. But our apartments that we were staying in had a pool that ran right through the centre of the complex. So you walk out of your door and you're in the pool, or you go around the corner and you're on your own private little beach. And it was no one else there. It was sort of only people that stayed.
What a choice. Beach. What did I do this morning? Beach, private pool, beach.
And I did do that. And there were days where I did do that. I went and, you know, and there were many times where I went off for a walk down the beach on my own and, you know, and did silly things like collected shells and, you know, played in the water for a bit and, you know, then went for a walk. And that was the beauty of it. Like, whereas in Phuket, the main, the beach area, you know, you've got hundreds of tourists on it and just a little bit too crazy for my liking. The shopping also, I would have done the other way around as well. I sort of went a little bit too crazy with the shopping in Koh Samui and got to Phuket and thought, well, you know, maybe I could have probably saved it to Koh Samui. But yeah, you know, that's what you do. But you learn, and I know next time when I go how I'll sort of do things and how I won't do them.
We've got a suggestion from Scott Davies out there for your next trip to the beach. He says you should be counting the beat and playing the ukulele on the beach, which is really cool.
Thanks, I'll take that advice on board.
Yes, thank you. Very sage. So what would you say were some of the highlights of that trip with your sister, her husband and children?
Yeah. Look, also a really good friend of mine, Andrew, I've known for well over 20 years, came along. And, you know, we've always had a great a friendship and relationship, and that just strengthened it a little bit more. But, you know, look, definitely getting the time to spend with my family. My sister had to come home early for another family reason, and I sort of was without her for about 4 or 5 days. And I even told her this, but the day she left, I had a bit of a cry. And, you know, because she was like a security blanket and that, you know, and I sort of thought, well, she's gone now. I've got to sort of try and fend for myself, but I was all right.
You're an Amazon. What are you talking about? You're about 7 foot tall. And you're worried about fending for yourself.
Well, no, the funny thing was, because I'd read so many things about Thailand before I went, I was really, you know, even going through airport security, I'd done nothing wrong whatsoever, but every time I went through those damn scanners, I would freak and get all hot and flustered. And, you know, a lot of the time, the security at the airport would have a laugh at me because they could obviously tell that I was stressed out about it. But, you know, it's just not knowing a country and getting to know a country as well. So you've got to be on your guard. Or you do need someone that knows what they're doing if you go away there, definitely. Just don't go there with your eyes closed because you get yourself into trouble.
Well, did you do any language prep before you went?
No, but, you know, I learned things like the good old... All they seem to say is Kupenkau or Kupenkup. That's all they seem to say.
What does that mean?
Well, it says thank you, lady, and there's also thank you, man. I can't remember. Kupenkau is woman and Kupenkup, I think, is for the male, but I'd have to get that right. But my nephew, Aidan, he had the Thai book, so every now and again... In a cafe or something, or somewhere or eating, he'd splurt out something to the, you know, things like "I love you, lady" or something like that, and have a good laugh. But
those books can get you into trouble.
He was playing with the idea, I'm sure of it. But just very, you know, really really interesting place everywhere. And then I was in Kuala Lumpur, and I was really impressed with Kuala Lumpur, just the way the symmetrical living of the way they live. It's insane.
Sorry, what do you mean by symmetrical?
Well, they live down lines and blocks, and, you know, when you're driving through on the freeway to Kuala Lumpur, you see all the houses, and they all look the same, and they just line after line after line, and the same building, the same colour. If anyone said, you know, you've got to meet down the corner of blah blah blah, I'd go where, because it was sort of just. All planned out so well. But the city itself of Kuala Lumpur was really clean, and I rode the rail network. And
what do you think about the rail network?
I love the rail network.
What about it turns you on?
Just the fact that you get there and 2 minutes later a train comes. So it's like there's time that when they know there are people on the platform, they send a train down the tracks because it's all electrified. There's no driver. So when I said to the people I was traveling with, you know, look, I love the rail network, you know, blah, 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 the drivers are on time and stuff like that. And he goes, there is no driver. I'm like, what do you mean there is no driver? So the next train came down the track and there was no driver. It's all done by electrification, but which is really, really impressive. Clean stations, not grotty.
Now, how'd you fly? I mean, how'd you fly between the different Asian countries, and how'd you fly into KL?
Okay, so we flew with Air Asia. So we flew into... So we used Air Asia. I think it was Air Asia for nearly all of the flights. It was, actually. So flying into... Look, you use a budget airline. You don't get a meal on the plane, but...
But the terminal you arrive in isn't budget, is it? The LCC terminal?
No, not at all. No, you might land on the tarmac and have to be, you know, transported by a bus or something like that. You don't get the luxury of being dropped right at the airport, but, you know, right at the door. But so what? You know, who cares? The flying was no problem at all. Coming home was probably the hardest, coming home, because we've been delayed in Kuala Lumpur for many, many hours, and we're all feeling a little bit sleep deprived. I had no sleep for 24 hours, had to be up at 4:30 to fly back again, and coming home had screaming children all day on the flight and noise, and I think I'm feeling more jet lagged today than I did yesterday. So you battle through, though. But yeah, no, amazing experience. I'd probably I'd do it again. Definitely do it again for sure. Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate your honesty, Rob. I really do. The fact that you had anxiety about it, you had some concerns about going, but that you made it through, and then even when your sister left and you did have a cry, I think that's gorgeous that you're able to say that, because sometimes people, you know, put on a brave face and go, yeah, yeah, it was all fantastic and fine, but actually don't share those points in time
exactly.
where you feel vulnerable.
Exactly.
And I think that's what travel's about. It's about... you know, deepening your understanding of yourself and other people. And
yeah, and look, I had a few personal things I had to deal with before I went away. So I thought, you know, the holiday will work well for me, and it was perfect timing. So it's done me the world of good. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. And
thank
good
you.
Luck with
it's
your
been
next
a pleasure.
Travels.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's Rob Bellman, 4-year veteran here at Joy. Thanks for joining us. You're on Detours with Jodie and Greg on Joy 94.9.
And in just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with Amit Magani, who is the president of the Indian Students of Australia. Very remarkable young man. You will hear about him in just a few moments here on Joy 94.9. I can't resist you, no matter how I try. and that is Kate Sobrano with Bedroom Eyes here on Joy 94.9. This is the Detours Travel Show, and I'd like to welcome Pete Dillon from Cravings. What's coming up at 1 o'clock?
I was about to say, you've got bedroom eyes.
Oh, sweetie,
you have really lovely eyes.
Thank you.
Coming up, you've been talking about Thai food, and I know you're going to sort of venture elsewhere in Asia. Kieran is here from Taxi Dining Room, which is in Federation Square, to talk about their new menu and Tony Twitchett, their chef, and that's all a modern Australian Asian influence. Also in the house is Richard Cornish, who is a writer. He's just co-written the third Movida book. It's Movida's Guide to Barcelona. So we have that. And we're talking to Ella Wolf Tasker, who has Wombat Hill House in Dalesford.
Oh, all that and more on Cravings is going to be a big show, Pete.
Oh, it's going to be a huge show. And stand by, I've got a very big giveaway. So people best be listening, because there's a huge prize to
be won.
If you're
a Joy member, you can, and you haven't won a prize in the last fortnight, you can join.
And if you aren't a Joy member, sign up.
Yeah, sign
up. Please, very much. I'll see you at 1 o'clock.
Pete Dillon, Cravings. Fantastic. Jody, we've got another brilliant guest here in the studio today. It's been a big day. Would you like to introduce this young man next to me?
Absolutely. Well, I'd like to welcome to the studio Amit Magani, who is the president of the Federation of Indian Students of Australia and who recently was awarded the Young Victorian of 2011. So congratulations, Amit, and thank you for joining us. I know you've come from Gippsland today.
Thank you. I thought of arriving here a bit early, but there was a lot of traffic, so I couldn't help it.
Well, you're here now, and welcome to Detours, Amit.
Thank you.
How long have you been in Australia personally?
7 years.
Oh, you're an Aussie. What are you talking about?
I came down on the 26th of January 2005.
So on Australia Day, that's you arrived.
Right.
How cool is that?
So what brought you to Australia?
Well, it was the culture, it was the education system, it was the opportunity to build on my future. That's what made me select Australia as my preferred destination for education.
And I was reading a little bit about you. You're from Jaipur in Rajasthan,
yes.
But you grew up in the United Arab Emirates, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So what sort of identity do you have, cultural identity? Which country do you feel you come from or belong to?
Well, I think I've got a mixture of all of, I have a blend of all the three countries. Because I've been brought up in Dubai, United Arab Emirates, I know the Arab society and the way they, the way they present themselves. And then I also have, because I was born in India and my parents are from India as well, so I have the Indian cultural background as well. And because I've been in Australia for 7 years, so I have the Aussie kind of outlook towards life as well. So
give us three things, one from each of those cultures, some really strong points that blend really well. What are the things that come from each of those three cultures for you?
Okay, from Indian perspective, I would say it's more of meditation. It's more of self enlightenment. That's very strong. When it comes to Arab society, then it's more of being strongly focused on what you have to do or what needs to be done. And then when it comes to Australia, then in Australia, one thing that I like the most is people do the way the things they were supposed to do. I mean, it's like if you're stuck somewhere and you know there's no way out, still you make it possible. Still you keep yourself under control and you try to figure the way out. And that's what I really like about Australian culture.
Now, that connects well to your role as president of the Students Association or Students Federation of Australia for Indian students. Where'd the passion come from to be a leader amongst the Indian students community?
Well, the passion came in because I have gone through the same issues when I was studying my aerospace engineering. And we had certain issues within the university. And I thought if I have to go through that, then definitely there are a lot of other people who are going through the same. And because of that, students elected me as the Wealth Education Officer for RMIT at first place. And then I thought, let's just expand, let's just broaden up our mind and let's see what's really happening away from university. And when I went away from university, I found a lot of issues with the Indian students. And I joined the organization and then finally I got to know the reality of what people are facing or the reality of what students are facing. And that's how the whole journey began.
So in your period of time being here in Australia studying, you would have seen a range of different changes and a range of challenges for international students.
Yes, yes. One of the major challenges has been being a part of the culture, being a part of the Australian culture, because the culture out here is so intense. It's like everyone is invited, but you have to make the effort to do so. And whereas in different other cultures, it's not the way the Australian culture is. Out there, you tend to stay within your boundaries, and to go away from the boundary is something that kills people to a certain extent, because people like to be comforted in their own environment. And if you want to blend with the Australian culture, you have to go away from your environment and start interacting with people.
And I think some of the challenges that international students face generally is also about having that connectedness with the community.
Yes.
So people might identify with different faith groups or cultural groups, but being involved and feeling part of something bigger.
They need an opportunity to connect. And that is what has been lacking throughout most of the universities or most of the TAFE colleges, can every single campus. Yes, they have student unions and they have student services, but that is not just it. The ball does not stop there. It has to roll on. It has to move on.
Now, tell us, we hear too often the deficit. We hear too often things that go wrong. I'd like you to share some of the things that go right and some of the brilliant things and people you've experienced in meeting Indian students.
There has been lots. There has been lots of, you know, every coin has two sides. So there's a positive and there's a negative. In negative, everybody knows about it. And, you know, student issues, employment or housing issues or anything else like that. And the positive side of it is there have been a lot of students who are well respected within the society at this point in time. And it is not just in Australia, it's throughout the whole world. You see the leaders that are emerging from India is, you know, it's exciting. It's exciting to see people going out from India, becoming a leader in their own field and, you know, contributing to the economy in India and also in the places where they are. So we even today we have a lot of brilliant leaders in Australia, you know, doing pretty well. So at the end of the day, I would say it's a give and take situation.
Well, as an Australian here, I'd like to think it's more positive than negative. I'd like to think that we improved a lot and we actually worked very hard to make sure that some of the bumps aren't there for the next round of students coming here to establish their learnings and perhaps contribute to this society as well as their own society.
Yes, definitely. I have personally seen a lot of improvements happening around. And, you know, the problems are there. Yes, there are a lot of issues that has to be presented well, or, you know, they have to be looked after. But at the same time, I can see a lot of improvements happening as well.
Now, Amit, you've been in Australia for 7 years. Tell us some fabulous sites you've seen here, the favourite parts of Australia that you've been to here.
To be honest, I haven't gone to many places.
You've been too busy working.
The only place that I could think of, I've just gone to several places. One is the Great Ocean Road, mm-hmm. And then I've gone to the Mount Buller. Just recently, I went to Buchan Caves.
To the Buchan Caves. Fantastic.
In Gippsland. Yep.
That was excellent. And now I'm planning to go towards Wollongong. So that's the only places that I've visited in Melbourne.
That's good. They're pretty good places. And you'd be surprised the number of Australians that have spent their whole lives here and they have not visited those four places.
Yes, definitely.
Well, we'd like to acknowledge and thank you for your leadership and your work in lots of different communities and bringing people together and talking in a dialogue and in a constructive way. So what's next for you? Have you finished your course?
Yes, I finished my course and I'm working as an aeronautical engineer with Gippsland Aeronautics. So we build aircrafts, and at the same time, the next stage of my life begins probably next week because I get married.
Oh, fantastic. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, congratulations on being able to get married as well. In our community, we don't have the same equality, but we do celebrate and have your joy as well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining us, Amit. And we'd like to have you back another time when perhaps you've got a bit more time and you're not rushing around to get married.
Sure,
and,
sounds good.
here's some more of your stories and insights.
Sure.
You're listening to the Detours Travel Show here on Joy. It's nearly 1 o'clock. That Equal Love Rally actually starts at 1 o'clock outside the State Library of Victoria. If you want to check that out, go along. And thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Jodie. It's been fabulous. Bring your backpack, folks. We want people with backpacks outside the Civil Administration Tribunal at 10 o'clock or quarter to 10 on Monday morning, 55 King Street. Backpack. We want gay people with backpacks because you'll be in the age. Okay, thank you.
We'll be back again at 12 noon next Saturday. Have a great week.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9. I've been around the world.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.